This is Kiwan on CBC Radio 1 across Canada, Sirius XM 169, from PRI, Public Radio International in the United States, and on CBC Television. Well, my next guest is one of the most striking and original actors working today, from the madly popular Lord of the Rings trilogy to The Road, and of course his films with Canadian directing legend David Cronenberg, A History of Violence, Eastern Promises, and A Dangerous Method. Viggo Mortensen has performed in everything from epic blockbusters to auteur-driven cinema that has brought awards and critical acclaim. He's played a string of memorable villains, sadistic, tormented, conflicted. He's played a host of compelling heroes, righteous, romantic, also conflicted. Acting is just one of many artistic disciplines that he pursues with passion and commitment. His work has been published and exhibited around the world. Now, that longtime cinematic collaborator of his, David Cronenberg, is the subject of a major exhibition, and Viggo Mortensen is here in support. The Cronenberg Project runs until January 19th at TIFF Bell Lightbox in Toronto, but right now, Viggo Mortensen joins me in Studio Q. Hello, sir.
Hello there. It's nice to be back in Canada.
Nice to see you again. Yeah, what a pleasure.
I'm a fan of Q. I listen to it on U.S. public radio, usually late at night is when they put it on.
Thank you. Well, I'm honored, and especially because you had some trouble crossing the border, so I was afraid you'd be in a pissy mood or something.
No. I'm running a little late. I literally jumped out of the car and ran into your recording studio because I had a car breakdown, had to go back across the Thousand Islands Bridge and get another one, but I'm here.
You're a champ. Thanks for being here. I mean, there have been some magical director-actor collaborations through film history, and I guess some would argue that Cronenberg and Mortensen are right up there. Going into this David Cronenberg celebration and this retrospective, and I guess reflecting on your artistic partnership, what is it? Have you gained any insight into the creative alchemy that has made it such a strong partnership between you two?
I think it's a relatively simple thing. We communicate well, you know. We listen to each other. We're interested in what the other has to say. I mean, that's the foundation of any good friendship. And when I think of David, I hear his name. I don't think of the movies we've done first. I think of him as David, my friend, you know, and that's the basis of our collaboration, and hopefully I'll get to do more with him, you know.
Presumably you communicate well with other directors.
I try to. Other directors aren't so, maybe so secure, or and therefore not always as open as David is to, you know, the thoughts of his crew members or his cast. David welcomes all suggestions, and he's not afraid to, usually in a gentle way, to tell you that it's a really stupid idea or to say, oh, that's useful. I'll take credit for that.
He describes you as being like a brother. How does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Yeah, we're brothers that get along. There are brothers who don't, but we get along, I would say, almost always. And, you know, after the first movie we did, History of Violence, I mean, partway into that shoot, we were already finishing each other's sentences for each other, and also just without words, knowing, you know, he would say, why don't we try another, you know? And I'd say, yeah, I know, and then do it. And he'd say, okay, I think we got that. In other words, I understood something about why he wanted to do the other take without him having to explain too much. That happened often on the first movie, and more and more on Eastern Promises and A Dangerous Method.
Well, brothers also fight or have creative conflicts.
Yeah.
You know, what does it look like when you and David fight?
We haven't really had any you know, big fights yet, even little fights. Every once in a while we misunderstand what the other one's saying, but we've always been able to talk about things. I can lose my temper and get impatient with people, but with him, I don't feel, you know, any kind of angst. There's enough angst, I guess, in the stories we're telling that personally we're not... so far, anyway, we haven't had the experience of fighting.
I mean, I guess my question is, could you take him?
I take him? yeah, I don't know. If he was wearing a Blue Jays or a Toronto Maple Leafs sweater, I might be able to take it.
Would be inspired
easily.
To take.
Yeah, I would.
We'll get back to that. But you know, he was once in this studio, and he said, like, apropos of nothing, I'm trying to remember which movie it was. It might have been for Eastern Promises, but he said, you know, I know how to kill you in 5 seconds. I you know, and he had this. But I was terrified. He said, I could show you how I could kill you. And I thought he might reach across the table and actually do it. You
know? I think he probably does now. He studied all that. That was one of the things on that movie that we enjoyed. I was in Russia for a while before we started shooting. And I met some people who gave me some lessons. And I also found some literature on certain kinds of moves that even David didn't know yet, and he was very pleased about that. And during the course of shooting, we talked about that a little bit too, hand-to-hand combat.
I want to ask you about that kind of preparation, but let me go to the first movie you did with David. And when you decided to do A History of Violence, as you just said, it was just a few years after you'd wrapped the Peter Jackson's three-part movie adaptation of Lord of the Rings. So this is the trilogy that is amongst the biggest grossing movie franchises in of all time, and there's this argument that, you know, as one of the stars of that, then you have carte blanche, you can do what you want coming out of that. What tell me about the choice to do somewhat alternative or edgy or quirky film like A History of Violence with David Cronenberg?
Well, I mean, I've never really changed my way of looking at jobs. I will wait and wait until there's a story that I feel is really good. And there, once in a while, there are stories that, you know, my agent and everybody else thinks is a good story, but there's something about it that doesn't, I don't feel connected to it, you know. Sometimes that comes in the process. By virtue of saying yes, you dive in and it comes to you. But I don't know.
Like,
I don't
know exactly. What have you said no to?
I don't want to.
What kind of movie?
Big movies, little movies, all kinds of stuff. I mean, most of the things that are written, whether they're big budget movies or low budget movies, Canadian, American, you know, U.S., European, it doesn't matter. Every country makes mostly bad movies every year. That's just a fact. Most movies are bad, and of all the scripts that don't get made into movies, 99% of them are not very good. But I just follow my instinct. I don't always have a clear reason. Sometimes it's just a gut feeling. It's not for me.
And what does the gut feeling tell you? Like, how do you know that it's something that isn't right?
Well, I've learned over the years that if I'm afraid of it, you know, if it makes me nervous and I'm uncertain as to whether I can do a good job on it, but I can recognize that it's a good story, then I should probably do it.
Wait, two steps back. When you say you'll take it if you're afraid of it, but the story is compelling.
Yeah.
What part are you afraid? What's the afraid of it part?
Yeah, the unknown. You know, I mean, that's how you grow as an artist and as a person. You try things that you haven't tried before. You know, in the case of an actor, a way of speaking, or let's say it's a character that has a lot of dialogue or speaks in a language that you're not familiar with. You know, I just finished a job, a French movie that's in French and Arabic. I don't speak Arabic fluently, you know.
Yeah, you're an interesting guy because you do so much preparation. I know you're not a method actor. You're not necessarily walking around as Freud, you know, throughout the day, if you're playing the character, but you do so much preparation, like just reading about what you did for Eastern Promises, for example, and what you just spoke to, the research about Russia and Russians and really getting into understanding the complexities of the characters. What's interesting about that is you're this multidisciplinary artist. You seem highly creative. You seem to follow your gut where you want to creatively. And that free-flowing creative guy seems at odds with the cerebral, highly planned guy who will do the kind of research you do. How do you reconcile those two sides of Viggo Mortensen?
Well, I would say that you just described David to some degree too, you know, because people think of him as being extremely methodical. Everything is probably analyzed to the nth degree. He doesn't take one step during shooting that's not completely planned, and that's not so, as I learned right away. He's not someone who does storyboards. He's not someone who rehearses. yes, he thinks a lot. He turns over every stone he can before he starts shooting. But because he's so well prepared, whatever you end up doing, he knows instantly if that works or not. Even if it's something that surprises him, he's looking to be surprised because he's, you know, an audacious artist. And then he's not going to let it go until it's done, until it's right. And I think that's great. You do need to be pushed also. I do. I mean, I think as a person, even though I'm busy doing lots of things all the time and there's never enough hours in the day to read and, you know, find out things, I am kind of cowardly and kind of lazy, you know, and just that's how I am. If I can get
cowardly.
I mean, in terms of not wanting to try new things unless I'm pushed sometimes. I'll push myself, but sometimes if I'm close and I'm not quite sure, as in the case of A Dangerous Method, if it had been another director saying you can play Freud and I didn't really trust this director for whatever reason, I probably wouldn't have done it because I thought, that's really a stretch. It's really a stretch for me to play that part. But David saying so pushed me to do it.
In terms of who you've become, both as an actor but in the public consciousness as well, through the course of these Cronenberg films, there's this notion that A History of Violence, I mean, even though you were one of the stars of the Lord of the Rings trilogy, A History of Violence really cemented you as being seen as a leading man that can carry a film. Do you think that's true?
Could be. I'd done some other smaller movies where I had important roles, but that I suppose that was, it could be. I mean, it was certainly a movie that had, you know, for the size movie it was and the type of movie it was, it did quite well in the box office and it had a lot of critical success. And it was, it wasn't just on my shoulders. I mean, it was kind of a two-hander with Maria Bello. And yeah, it was a good role. But even that one, you know, when we first met, and I didn't know David, I didn't know what he was going to be like. You know, from his movies, I thought, well, he'll be a strange guy and I'm going to go have breakfast with him tomorrow. He was in California where I was living at the time. And I had said, you know, through my agent, because I didn't know David to call him or anything, I said, nah, he shouldn't. I don't want to waste his time because I don't really care for the story. It was just a straight exploitation, 120-odd pages of just gore and mayhem, and it seemed kind of senseless to me, you know. It seemed like the source material, which is a pulp novel that was just really bloody murder kind of story, you know. It didn't seem that interesting to me, and I said, I don't, you know, not worth it. And he said, no, he wants to meet with you anyway. It's fine. He's got other things to do or something. So I went to meet him, and I said, I'd rather be honest. He goes, no, I'd rather be honest too. What are you having, scrambled or fried? I said, fried. No. He said, I'd rather you were honest. And I said, I don't really, there are things that I don't care for really, and it's a lot of work to do something if you don't really care about it. I don't want to let you down or waste your time. He goes, well, what is it you don't like? And every single thing I brought up were things, well, it's funny you should mention that. That's where I'm worried about. And here's what I was thinking of doing with that. He was already miles ahead.
Well, that's where your brother's again, too, right?
You know, yeah, and the script.
But when you...
We ended up shooting a script that was 70, he took 40 or 50 pages out and just said, this is going to be really lean and a lot of it's going to be, you know, it's going to be gestures and reactions, and it's going to be a lot better than what you're reading now. And he was true to his word.
Such a good film. You're such an interesting guy as an artist. I mean, you don't just act. You famously founded your own independent publishing house more than a decade ago. You write poetry, you paint, you take photographs, you play music. We've talked about that in the past. Does all of this come from the same creative well for you, Viggo? Or do these different artistic disciplines satisfy different parts of your creativity?
No, they're all connected. If I'm recording something or just reworking a poem on my own, of course, I'm on my own. And there's something good about that, and that you control the final product, whereas a movie you don't. You know, it can be a scene that everybody loves, but you would have maybe edited it differently. You know what I mean? But when you're writing a poem or making a painting or singing or playing the piano or something, it's what happens then. And there's something good about that. But there's also, I do like collaborating with people. You know, I do like, there's not too many David Cronenbergs around, but there are some directors that I've connected with on some level, and I've enjoyed that. And actors, I really like actors. I like watching actors work. I like the way each actor has a different process. No matter how similar they might seem at first, there's something, it's sort of like meeting different species of animals or something, you know, and finding a way to get along and in order to tell the story is, that's fascinating.
But when you're writing poetry, you're a creator. Right? And when you're acting, you're an interpreter, are you not?
Yeah, but you're also creating, you're pushed, you know, you're bouncing off someone else, you're reacting, you know? I mean, the best acting is good reacting to circumstances, to what other actors give you, to what the day brings. But you're still creating, you know? There can be, you can go on a roll. It doesn't have to be a monologue or a solitary moment for the character. It can be when there's lots of other people in the room. It's like playing music, you know, when you're playing with other musicians. If you're playing by yourself and it's a piano solo, it's one thing, it's fun. You're playing off your own echoes. But if you're with someone else, you end up playing notes that you wouldn't have played in reaction to them to try to find some melody together, some kind of harmony in some cases, or lack of harmony intentionally, you know. It's fun. You're bouncing off them. That's all. It's just, it's different, but it's still creative, you know. You're still, it's up to you. Your reaction is your reaction. It's nobody else's.
I feel like this is something ask Joni Mitchell this. Are there ideas that you have that you feel like you can only satisfy one way? Like you sort of go, this is a music idea. I can't paint this. I can't act this. This has got to come out musically. Or do you even think in those terms?
I don't. I mean, I could try to see where that takes me. I'm not against that. It's another challenge. I think generally, you know, that we are drawn to art or to making art in whatever its form as a way of avoiding discomfort, you know. And that can be, you know, just the minor irritations of everyday life or, the anguish of suffering and death, you know, the most primordial fears that you have.
Well, what about you? What is the discomfort that you...
Even when you're telling a story that's about death and involves violence or suffering or pain or sorrow, it's still a story. It's still...
An escape?
Yeah, it is an escape from the truth, you know. I think, I don't know what philosopher, it was probably Nietzsche that said that art is a way of avoiding the truth. We make art to avoid the truth.
And what are you trying to avoid?
Even if I'm trying to tell the
truth as I can. What are you trying to avoid?
Yeah, all that, you know. I'm going to die, you know, just like everybody else. And I've always found that irritating, you know what I mean? And stimulating. I mean, as a kid, as one of my earliest memories is realizing, you know, once I got the hang of it, knowing that, you know, dogs die and people die and... The first contact with that, because that's something you have to learn. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not born knowing you're going to die, and humans are unique in that way, it seems, that they know. Once they know, they never forget it,
yeah.
No matter how much they try to escape from it and avoid it. And I think making art is, it's not only about trying to escape death, but it's even telling movies that are maybe entirely about death, you're still distracting yourself.
Wow.
You know, and that's...
How do you feel about getting older?
I'm not...
Does that freak you out?
No, not so much. I mean, I have to be reminded that I am sometimes, and then it's kind of shocking. It takes me longer each morning. You know, when I was a little kid, the first thing I would think when I woke up was, I'm going to die. That sucks, you know? I mean, not in the sense of being afraid of it, just being irritated. That it didn't seem fair, like whose idea was this, you know? There's a lot of things to do today.
That's the first thing you would think as a kid when you woke up?
I did.
Every day?
Yeah, I still do. The difference now is it takes me lately it takes me a little longer to get my engine running, you know.
So that you could think about dying.
Yeah. No, I mean, I wake up and I find it irritating, and I'm sort of grumpy about it, so I need to sort of get busy.
You're a star. You're a really successful actor, and yet you somehow seem to have avoided some of the public scrutiny and the power dynamics that come with being a recognized guy. You're not really a tabloid guy. How have you avoided that?
I don't know. I'm just living my life, which evidently is too boring to be covered in the tabloids. I do remember that, you know, while the Lord of the Rings movies were coming out, or certainly after the first or second one had come out, I was trailed a bit, and I didn't realize it. And then, you know, a friend or family member would say, "Do you know that you're in such and such a paper, and it shows you going into the vets with a dog?" Or there was a picture that someone showed me. I was coming out of a donut shop. I had a donut in my mouth. I think I had a donut and car keys in my mouth, and I was carrying two sacks. I mean, it was not a very flattering picture, but, you know. And then there was another one where I was waiting for a friend to pick me up because we were going to go to a bar and watch a soccer match. And I was lying. I was napping. You know, I had my feet kind of in the street, and I was lying in the grass. I looked like some bum just lying there. I was just, you know, dozing in the sun, waiting. He was running late, and Dad ended up there. But I, you know, that's not really exciting material, you know. So no, I mind my own business. That's what I do.
Depending on how many donuts you have in your mouth, it could be. Let me ask you quickly about a project you're working on. You said you like to work with iconoclasts, Cronenberg, Gus Van Sant, but you're not just a Renaissance man.
I didn't say that.
You haven't said that?
I don't. I may have sometime. Did I?
I think you've said that. Yeah. But you're working on a film that you want to direct, right? Is that right?
Yeah, which is kind of nervy. I mean, look
at... It's what-y?
Nervy, or it's kind of like...
audacious?
Mean, yeah, you know how... I mean, it takes David years to get funding for his movies, so why do I think I'm going to be able to do that? Who knows? But yeah, I'm writing something that I would like to do. We'll see.
Well, I can think of a few reasons why you're going to do it. One, because you like challenges, the things that scare you.
Yeah.
Two, you like being pushed, and this will push you. Three,
no, not why wanting to. I mean, okay. Who's gonna finance it?
And you're getting closer to death all the time.
There
you
go.
You gotta move on this.
Right? Yeah, you're right.
It's irritating, death. Yeah. How do you reconcile this the grand divide between you and your brother David Cronenberg when it comes to the Habs and the Leafs? I mean, how does this play out on set? I don't understand how you guys can even talk to each other.
Well, he's more of a baseball and Formula One car racing fan than he is actually a hockey fan.
All right.
I mean, when I've questioned him about hockey, he seems to change the subject to baseball. And we went to see a Mets game in New York one time together, and that didn't seem to cause a problem. But his crews are generally, you know, Toronto-based crew, so that does cause some problems. Once I realized that on History of Violence, then I made sure that all my off-camera acts of violence were performed wearing a Habs sweater.
you remain a Habs loyalist, yes?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was up at the Bell Center last week to watch them lose.
Hey, man, it's always a pleasure. I thank you so much for taking the time and for the energy and the perspectives and do come back.
Very nice to be here. Thank you.
Oscar-nominated actor Viggo Mortensen, The Cronenberg Project. Major exhibition and screenings runs until January 19th at TIFF Bell Lightbox in Toronto. Viggo's part of that. He's just had a talk with David Cronenberg. International touring locations and dates to be announced for this Cronenberg Project as it moves around. Viggo Mortensen has joined me for a feature interview here live in Studio Q.